A new op-ed published in the Wall Street Journal asserts that COVID-19 was engineered and could not have emerged in nature. Now, I'm not here to debate the veracity of that opinion piece. I want to point out that it brings us one step closer towards full-scale war with China. Potentially an absurd statement, but for those who have been paying attention, you know exactly why. Recently, Chinese state media said they need to expand their nuclear arsenal and send a shiver down the spine of the American elites that they will be ready for nuclear war and confrontation. And this came after Joe Biden said we need an investigation into the origins of COVID-19. And many more prominent personalities, including Fauci himself, have entertained the possibility that COVID-19 came from the Wuhan lab. Now, again, I'm not here to talk about COVID. I'm here to point out that it is an escalation of the posturing between the U.S. and China. But of course, posturing is just that. None of this means there will be war with China, but the U.S. is certainly preparing for it. Now, they've been preparing for it for some time, and it seems like they're now taking it much more seriously. Last week, I reported, or I should say that I commented on the reporting of military.com, that the Pentagon has begun buying up bombs for Pacific warfare, no longer Middle Eastern warfare, which would be targeting ISIS. Now, this could just be that Donald Trump decimated ISIS and China's the next logical threat. So let's ramp up our, you know, positioning there. But we're now learning from Forbes. Anticipating war with China, the U.S. Air Force is fanning out across the Pacific. It's not the only way in which the U.S. has begun escalating its preparation for a war with China. And as most of you know, there is the idea of the fourth turning, as well as Thucydides' trap. And there's some speculation that what we've seen over the past year is, well, it was meant to shore up our defenses for a looming war with China. It may be just a coincidence theory, but many have pointed out that with people fleeing big cities and decentralizing the economy with more remote workers, we are more robust in the event of a centralized attack on one of our major economic hubs. And because of COVID, we've begun shoring up our manufacturing here at home, which would protect us in the event of full-scale war with China. So I can't tell you what will happen. I can tell you I certainly hope there's not going to be full-scale war with China. But looming tensions over Taiwan suggest that it's more than just one thing. A new leaked document is now being covered far and wide. The U.S. actually proposed nuking China, mainland China, over Taiwan. And as China seeks to gain control of this island nation and major disputes arise culturally over Taiwan, stands to reason there's a real catalyst for war outside of just COVID, and we could be staring down the barrel of, maybe it sounds silly, but World War III. I mean, if you look at what China's doing with the Uyghur Muslims, there's certainly a moral call from many people for some kind of intervention. You've got the economic push, and now you've got COVID. A lot of people might actually start becoming bullish on this, and that to me is worrying. We don't want war. But sometimes there's hard moral questions, and I'll tell you this. Yeah, the milquetoast fence sitter guy, I don't have all the answers. I can't tell you what we should or shouldn't do, but I'm typically anti-war. There's a fear, though, that China will start pushing and then war will happen no matter what we do. So I don't have the answers. But let's take a look at what the U.S. is doing, why they're doing it, and why there is real fear that war with China could be around the corner. Before we get started, head over to timcast.com, click the members only button, become a member to help support our work. It gets you access to our exclusive members only section from the Timcast IRL podcast, but more importantly, supports the work we do so we can expand. We're doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes. We've got some new potential employees. We've got a newsroom set to launch very soon, and we are going to be expanding very dramatically. There will come a time where I will be commenting, for the most part, on original reporting from our staff, including myself, and it's with your support and only because of your support. So please consider helping out if you like the work that I do, but you can also really help out by sharing this video. As I often say, I don't have the marketing budget of CNN. YouTube does not give me preferential, authoritative access like they do CNN. If you think this video should get more views than CNN's videos do, share them. It's the best thing we can do, and it really does help me out and the work I'm doing. If you think the work I'm doing is good, that's one way you can support it, support these videos. But don't forget to like and subscribe as well. From Forbes, anticipating war with China, the U.S. Air Force is fanning out across the Pacific. Forbes reports, For years, the U.S. Air Force concentrated its warplanes at just two bases in the Western Pacific. For fighters, Kadena Air Force Base in Japan's Okinawa Prefecture, and for bombers and big support planes, Guam's Anderson Air Force Base. Beijing eyed these mega bases and devised a simple strategy for suppressing U.S. air power in the region. Build a couple thousand non-nuclear ballistic missiles, and in wartime, lob them at the bases until their runways, aprons, hangars, fuel tanks, and warehouses are nothing but craters. After years of buildup, the Chinese rocket force possesses around 1,300 ground-launched missiles with sufficient range to hit Kadena and Anderson from mainland China. The USAF is keenly aware of the threat. It has its own plan for dodging the missile barrages. The idea is to spread out hundreds of warplanes across potentially dozens of smaller bases, thus diluting the striking power of China's rocket force. The Air Force won't say exactly which bases are part of its plan, but it's possible to make educated guesses. American territories and small island countries offer the most dependable facilities. Arguably, the most important bases in the Philippines are accessible only at the whim of that country's mercurial president. The emerging map of the USAF's expanding base network also reveals where the service has potential airfield gaps, most glaringly in the Philippine Sea east of Taiwan. In that gap, the U.S. Navy's Pacific Fleet might lend its sister service a helping hand and deploy some of its 10 aircraft carriers and big deck assault ships. Now, this may just be the U.S. realizing its vulnerabilities. It may not actually be in anticipation to full-scale war with China. But I'm a little bit more bullish. I think we're going in the direction. Both philosophically, I mean, if you look at history, if you look at things like the Fourth Turning and Thucydides' Trap, there's maybe some speculative reasons why we can anticipate warfare, or I should say historical. It could also be that China is, they're ramping up their plans against Taiwan. They're ramping up their attempts at seizing the South China Sea. They're bombing Vietnamese fishing boats. Tensions are escalating. Of course, now you have the op-ed about COVID, the COVID origins, and what it means for the West, for Europe and the U.S. Should our economy have been decimated because of the Wuhan Institute of Virology's lab leak? If that's true, Grant, you're going to see a lot of people who are very angry, and they'll demand recompense. They'll demand some kind of reparation. China won't be willing to give. They may just say, you know what? Screw it. Now, right now, China's saying Australia is exaggerating. Because, you know, Australia recently came out, there was a report that they suggested war with China was also possible. And Australia has been working with the U.S. Now the U.S. all of a sudden is fanning out its air power. U.S. military doctrine is predicated upon air superiority. And now we have the U.S. Air Force fanning out its air force, giving it the ability to defend against a very serious assault from China. We recently heard, too, this is months ago now, that the U.S. was moving many of its bombers out of Guam, out of fear that China could wipe it out. This is the result of that. We're getting ready for something. Maybe nothing happens, but we're certainly getting ready for it. I want to make sure I stress that. A lot of people might think anticipation or fear of war or preparation for war means quite literally war will happen. I'm not saying that. And hopefully that's not what happens. Forbes continues. The Air Force maintains a master list of what General Kenneth Wilsbach, the head of the Pacific Air Force, is described as every single piece of concrete in the Pacific region. Quote, we have a plan for all those airfields, and some of them meet the criteria, and they are therefore part of what we call clusters. Wilsbach told Air Force magazine last year, some of the bases are main hubs in the network, others are spokes. Aircraft, fuel, weapons, and supplies, not to mention people, would move through the hubs to smaller spoke bases. The more often people and stuff move, the safer they are from Chinese rockets. That's the theory. An alphabet soup of concepts underpins the new base network. The practice of breaking up 20 plane fighter squadrons and dispersing small detachments of jets to outlying bases is called Agile Combat Deployment, or ACE. Bomber squadrons are practicing their own dispersal as part of the new Bomber Task Force Operation, or BTF. The Air Force plans to reinforce the most austere airfields with pre-packed sets of equipment under the so-called Deployable Airbase System, or DABS. To move munitions along base network, the flying branch has developed a procedure it calls Tactical Ferry, or TAC Ferry, whereby a fighter such as an F-15E loads up with more bombs than it could ever use in combat and delivers them to whichever small airfield it's going to be flying from. In essence, saving the weapons for later. Palau, Micronesia, and the Marianas, all small island countries in the mid-Pacific, are keen to host American forces. So I'm less concerned about the nitty-gritty of the tactics here, but I do want to point out it's not just the fanning out of the Pacific Fleet for the Air Force. Pentagon eyes new bombs for war with China, not ISIS. Now, I reported on this last week after China threatened nuclear war over COVID origins. I just want to briefly mention it for those who may not have seen that story. It is possible that the reason we're seeing this is simply because Trump wiped out ISIS. They go to mention that the Air Force wants to increase its procurement of the Joint Air-to-Surface Standoff Missile Extended Range, stealth cruise missiles, advanced weaponry. Many of these bombs are good for Pacific warfare, not Middle Eastern warfare. The speculation could be that we're diverting our attention away from the Middle East and getting ready for Pacific war. Considering the U.S. has been deploying more and more military assets to the Middle East, considering Joe Biden, who he is, pushing back our withdrawal from Afghanistan and escalating tensions in Syria, you know, a lot of people might not buy the idea that we're pulling out or prepare. We're not buying as many bombs for the Middle East because we've accomplished our mission. No, I certainly don't think that's the case. I think it's the case of finite resources and revenue. The U.S. can only support so much weaponry, can only buy so much. So although Joe Biden has been more hawkish towards the Middle East, the U.S. is now buying up bombs that would better suit them in Pacific war, in my opinion. The U.S. is gearing up for war in the Pacific, war with China, which may come soon and hopefully doesn't. I want to stress that. But what do you say? Do I say I see all these things happening and it could just be normal? A lot of people are of that opinion. Ah, this is normal. It's saber rattling. Nothing's going to happen. It's Cold War stuff. Yeah, but maybe this new story about the U.S. wanting potentially nuking China over Taiwan. Well, it didn't happen. And the proposal was 1958. That's good reason to believe none of this means much of anything. Considering, however, the philosophical, the historical, fourth turning, Thucydides' trap. Yeah, you got me worried, man. You got me worried. Check this out. This one I find really the most interesting. General Charles Flynn, brother of former National Security Advisor, takes reins of U.S. Army Pacific. Why Charles Flynn, of all people? I have no idea. You mean General Michael Flynn's brother? Yeah. They say General Charles Flynn took command of U.S. Army Pacific on Friday, vowing to continue transforming the 90,000 soldier force into one that can meet the challenge of a rising China. Quote, today as China trends on an increasingly concerning path, presenting challenge to the free and open Pacific, the Army is charged to change once more, Flynn said during a live stream ceremony at Fort Shafter. Media were not allowed to attend the event. Flynn, the younger brother of Michael Flynn, who briefly served as National Security Advisor under Trump, took the reins from General Paul La Camara, who will move on to command U.S. forces in Korea. This could be nothing. Could literally be a promotion, so they're moving some people around. Some people I know are getting really conspiratorial with it. I'm not interested in any of those conspiracies about Michael Flynn's brother now commanding the Pacific Fleet. This could just be, you know, Paul La Camara moving to Korea to use his experience specifically in an area where North Korea is a threat. Maybe makes sense. But if we're taking someone from the Pacific Fleet commanding U.S. forces in Korea, it could potentially be war with China is coming. It could just be nothing. It could. I mean, look, there was someone in command of this before Flynn. So here's they go on to say, Admiral John Aquilino, head of the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, welcomed Flynn back to Hawaii during an address at the ceremony. Addressing the audience, the Army's Chief of Staff, General James McConville, praised La Camara for his part in developing and testing the Army's first multi-domain task force, which is aimed at coordinating air, cyberspace, land, maritime space, and the electromagnetic spectrum in the battle environment. U.S. Army Pacific is also calibrating its force posture to be more agile through pre-positioning supplies in the theater to sustain the force. Maybe nothing, like I said. I'm really trying hard not to be like, war, it's coming, everybody go and hide. I think the signs are here, and I think there's a lot to talk about, beyond just the breaking news about potential documents from the 50s. We've got actual movements happening. Now, on April 7th, the AP reported on April 7th, U.S. military cites risk of rising risk of Chinese move against Taiwan. The U.S. is very much interested in not allowing that to happen and has been for quite some time. I bring you now to one of the most alarming stories we've gotten for a while, which comes from last month. Jacobin Magazine, which most of you know, socialist magazine, said the Pentagon seriously contemplated nuking China in 1958. Hey, we're serious. The United States ain't playing around. Newly leaked documents show that U.S. officials in 1958 cavalierly planned a nuclear strike on China over a handful of disputed islands. As Washington once more stokes tension with China, it's a reminder of the callous recklessness at the heart of U.S. foreign policy. Interesting time to release this information. Why was it done? They mention that this latest leak comes from Daniel Ellsberg. They say in the middle of this that Daniel Ellsberg, the whistleblower who leaked the Pentagon Papers 50 years ago, in an effort to end the Vietnam War, has released dozens of pages from a 1966 study revealing just how close the world came to nuclear war while conflict over Taiwan was brewing in 1958. The pages show that the U.S. government's top brass made concerted plans to drop nuclear bombs on China should it try to take not just Taiwan, the headquarters of the anti-communist Chinese nationalists backed by Washington, but several of the offshore islands administrated by it. Officials today would be asking themselves the same question that these folks were asking in 1958. Harvard historian Michael Szanyi told the New York Times, which broke the news of the disclosure last week. Ellsberg similarly told the Times they didn't believe the U.S. officials who engaged in such reckless talk then were more stupid or thoughtless than those in between or in the current cabinet. It's important to keep those points in mind while reading the documents themselves, which give a startling view into foreign policy decision making at the highest levels of the U.S. government and the warped mindset that underlies it. Now, I've got some serious questions about the release of this. Ellsberg, considered to be a hero who helped end the Vietnam War, conveniently drops a document that the U.S. seriously considered nuking China in 1958, particularly over Taiwan, at a time when the U.S. already fears a rising risk from China who wants to take Taiwan. All of a sudden now a document drops where it's like, oh, China, by the way, we will nuke you if you do this. Coincidence? Convenient? Useful idiot? Or attempted deterrence? I honestly have no idea. But I think the message here is clear. The message is to China. What do you think China, the Chinese officials, the military, the Chinese Communist Party, what do you think they are thinking when they see this? First of all, they probably knew it already, but this is a public rattle of the saber, and it comes from Daniel Ellsberg. Okay, so maybe coincidence, but I have to imagine this sends a message. We know you want Taiwan. We know you are training to take Taiwan. Don't forget, we will blow you up with nukes on mainland China if you so much as try it. Really convenient timing for this really, really old document to drop right now of all times. I find it strange. I really, really do. I find it suspect. There's a viral meme going around where they say U.S. intelligence agencies say, you know, weapons of mass destruction in the Middle East. They told us a lot of things to get us into war. Now we're hearing lab leak. We're hearing posturing, saber rattling. Now we're getting this. Man, I am just not a fan of it. You don't know who to trust. I can tell you, there are very serious moral questions about entering war that I can't answer. I can only ask. Do we sit back as China engages in atrocities and expands its footprint, challenging the U.S. at every turn? Do we just sit back as the Uyghur Muslims are abused and put in these concentration camps? Yikes, man. Do we sit back if lab leak turns out to be true? Yikes. What do we do? Look, I don't like war. I don't like the war in the Middle East because we were lied to into getting into it. So how am I supposed to trust these agencies now when they start saying these things? I don't know if I believe that either. And again, the U.S. intelligence agencies haven't concluded lab leak is real. I'm saying I don't know what to tell you. My biggest fear is that media like this emerges and we get swept up in the we must act mentality. You know, as most of you know, if you follow my videos on this issue, when I had Cassandra Fairbanks on Timcast IRL, she said tons of countries engage in atrocities. We don't intervene in all of them. That's true. We don't. It's a really good point. It is a really good point. Why China, though? Well, China's expanding its military operations in the South China Sea. China's building more nuclear bombs or they're advocating for it. They're expanding into the Pacific. They're apparently in violation of some of these military conventions about expanding military presence in the Pacific. They're doing it anyway. They're sending spies to our colleges. The Thousand Talents Program. The U.S. has been arresting these professors who have been in on the take from China. Oh, they're acting against us. There's cyber warfare you can't even see. They hacked Google a few years back, Gmail, targeting some activists. Do we just say, war isn't worth it, so we will let you keep playing dirty? Therein lies the very serious challenge. At what point do we stop and say, if we do nothing, China takes the world? At what point do we say, we will not allow them to keep making these moves? The question then becomes, at what point does China say the same thing about us, especially with Joe Biden firing missiles into Syria? I know Trump did too. I know Obama did too. At what point do they say, why should we sit back while you guys pull this off? It's a really good argument for America first. We shouldn't be involved in this stuff. The fear then is power vacuum. What happens when we let China take the Pacific? What happens when they then take the Panama Canal, when they take more and more and more? Do you want to live under their boot? I suppose if there's anything the woke understand is that they say there is no truth but power. That's not correct, but power can crush truth. And that's the fear here. Who is it? Where's the truth? Is the U.S. correct? They weren't right about the Middle East. They got us involved in that quagmire. I don't know what to tell you, man, other than I'm worried about what the U.S. is preparing for. And I'm also worried about what China is doing and what they will do should no one stand in their way. Now, the people of Taiwan don't think it's going to be a full-scale invasion. The U.S. does. This is from NBC News. They say Taiwan fears quieter Chinese threat. They say while officials in Washington sound the alarm about a potential Chinese invasion of Taiwan, officials and residents on the island say that fails to understand the true dynamics of the region. What they're saying in this report is that many in Taiwan believe China will use soft power, political pressure, propaganda, manipulation to gain more and more power in the region. If China is successful in, say, undermining the United States and Taiwan loses confidence the U.S. would actually defend them, then China walks in, literally just walks right in. And what would Taiwan do about it? They might fight back, but no one will defend them. And the U.S. is in a very shaky spot, very serious. I mean, our economy is seriously hurt. Things have kind of improved a little bit, but it's bad, which raises more questions. Foreign Affairs says the Taiwan temptation, why Beijing might resort to force. While Taiwan is saying they think it'll be soft power, there's still a reason, and Foreign Affairs covers, they might just come in and take it. And I think that only happens should the U.S. fail to shore up its defenses. Our economy is in shambles, but there's a bigger question at play. Now, I don't believe in any grand conspiracies or surreptitious plots, but we did talk about this last year. I wonder if what we're seeing with these lockdowns, the extensions of them, was actually beneficial. Not saying it was intentional, but maybe. I don't know. I don't see evidence to say it is. So I don't think there was a secret plot by Trump and Pompeo. But look at this. The New York Times reports Senate poised to pass huge industrial policy bill to counter China. The broad support of the bill highlights how competition with Beijing is one of the few issues that can still unite both political parties. This is a massive bill. Faced with an urgent competitive threat from China, the Senate is poised to pass the most expansive industrial policy legislation in the U.S. in U.S. history, blowing past partisan divisions over governmental support for private industry to embrace a nearly $250 billion investment in building up America's manufacturing and technological edge. The legislation, which could be voted on as early as Tuesday, is expected to pass by a large margin. That alone is a testament to how commercial and military competition with Beijing has become one of the few issues that can unite both political parties. Could this be? The U.S. is scared of war with China. We're anticipating it. We're fanning out the Pacific Fleet because we're worried they might blow us up. We're not buying bombs for the Middle East anymore. No, we're buying bombs for the Pacific. And a bipartisan effort to ramp up and invest in industry in the U.S.? Yeah. Last year, it became extremely apparent to the American people that we couldn't even make our own medicine. We couldn't even make vitamin C. We couldn't even make our own face masks. Something had to change. Manufacturing needed to come back. What would happen if China moved on Taiwan? How could we defend them? The moment we did, China would cut off our supply lines. So something had to change. Now, we don't know what's really going on behind the scenes. I don't know what the Pentagon's saying. I don't know what even some of these analysts are saying. They say one thing publicly. They say another thing privately. And we don't even know if they really expect war will happen. But I certainly feel like it's a strong possibility. How could we ever defend our allies in the Pacific if we were relying on China for our own medicine? When the crisis hit in COVID, U.S. companies that were making their face masks in China, their ships got sent out from China heading towards the U.S., stopped, turned around. Why? Because those companies, even if they are working for the U.S., they are still loyal to China. And that PPE gear that we needed so desperately was sent back to China. Wake up call. If China stormed the beaches of Taiwan, what could we do about it? Nothing. They'd shut down our manufacturing and our economy would crumble. Now a lot of people say, yes, so would theirs. Sure. Sure. It's a game of chicken then, isn't it? That we're going to sit here and be like, who's willing to take the damage? Maybe China is. I mean, hey, they got all our factories anyway. It might hurt their economy, but at least they control the production. They'd be seriously hurt, though. They're reliant on Oceania for a lot of their dairy. Believe it or not, it's kind of crazy. New Zealand, I believe, ships tons of dairy and meats and stuff into China. And I believe they get a lot of their coal from Australia. So it's not perfect. A lot of people say, why would China engage in this war if they're so reliant on materials from other places? Because after the war, you reap the spoils. Duh. It's the craziest thing. Why would they go to war with a country they rely on as a trade partner? Pretty sure a lot of countries did a lot of trade with a lot of other countries before they stormed in and just took what they wanted. Or could it be that trade isn't going as well as they'd like? Could it be that they really, really want Taiwan? Hey, Taiwan manufactures a ton of stuff, including computer chips. Hey, there's a big computer chip shortage right now. Could it be that China's like, we need this strategic production center, and we're willing to go to war over it? Why? Well, when you win the war, you win the spoils of the war. After World War II, the U.S. saw a major boom. So now there's a massive effort to shore up our manufacturing, our industry. From Reuters, they say U.S. manufacturing gains steam. Raw material, labor shortages are mounting. Another critical weak point. So maybe if there is a thirst for war, it won't happen all too soon. Not until the U.S. can secure raw materials and labor. The labor thing's really fascinating, though. It really is. People aren't working. Why? Let's talk about the COVID thing. People from big cities moved out of big cities. People from New York, 500,000, moved away. Started working remotely, helped decentralize our economy. What if there was a nuclear strike on a major city? Our economy would be seriously injured, seriously crippled. Okay. After the lockdowns, tons of people spread out to all different areas, and many of them still work in the same places, just remotely. That's good. We've sort of decentralized our economy to a bit, so it's safe from a single point of failure. What about raw materials and resources and jobs? Well, guess what? People aren't working at McDonald's anymore. People aren't working at these fast food restaurants. Granted, they're not working at steel mills or farms, but this is a dramatic refocus of what we need. All of a sudden, there's a ton of people who aren't working. They're getting paid not to work, basically, as fast food restaurants desperately beg for labor. What happens when Joe Biden has all of these people who desperately need work? Then he launches his Green New Deal-like plan. Trillions of dollars towards infrastructure. Well, a lot of people don't want to work at McDonald's for $15 an hour, $16. What happens when Biden comes out and says we need to build bridges, roads, and infrastructure for $25 an hour? What happens then when he decides we're cutting off your unemployment? Joe Biden, with this unemployment package, inadvertently or whatever, has a lot of people not working. It's his plan, right? He announces an infrastructure deal. We're gonna pay good. We're gonna pay well. That unemployment's gone. All of a sudden, all of these people sitting by the sidelines, waiting in the dugout for their chance to play, are told, now you got to work. Oh, by the way, tons of construction and infrastructure jobs, tons of manufacturing jobs. Speculation. I have no idea if that's going to happen. But it makes me wonder. You know, behind the scenes, it's not a conspiracy. It's stupid. Conspiracy theory. We know the government has plans. We know they plan for war. They strategize. If you think they don't, I mean, you're nuts. That's not a conspiracy theory. It's just me wondering, what is the U.S. doing? What are they getting ready for? What are they scared of? Well, these moves in the Pacific mean they've probably been well prepared for war for some time, and now they're making the public moves. If the U.S. thought war with China was going to happen, do you think they would announce their movements first? No. They would secure resources, the economy, planning, infrastructure. Then they would start buying up bombs and moving out the fleet. They don't want to send signals or getting ready for war when we have no infrastructure to support it. Nah, the moves come second. I wonder if this war prep has been happening for some time. I wonder if this is the last. China's imports grow at fastest pace in decades as material prices surge. Interesting. The story from today. They say China's imports grew the fastest pace in 10 years, fueled by surging demand for raw materials, although export growth slowed more than expected. Just speculating. But they're bringing in tons of raw materials and they're not sending things out. I wonder what that's all about. Could be nothing. Could be they want internal expansion and they don't want to send away a lot of the things they make. Or it could be they're pulling in the raw materials, keeping them ashore for conflict or to strengthen themselves. Honestly, who knows? China races to rival the U.S. with its own GPS system. But one analyst says it won't overtake the U.S. yet. Okay, so maybe war doesn't happen in the immediate. Maybe it won't be this year, or next year, or the year after. Maybe it won't be for 5 or 6 years. Maybe it won't happen at all. China wants its own GPS system. That's right. GPS, as we know it, is U.S. military tech. China really wants to rival us. GPS gives them massive power. They want to rival ours. I feel like war is inevitable, and it scares me. I hope I'm wrong. But so far, the U.S. is prepping for it. China's threatening it. And it seems like the signs are being written on the wall. The fourth turning, Thucydides' trap. Hopefully I'm wrong. I'll leave it there. Next segment's coming up at 8 p.m. tonight at youtube.com/TimcastIRL. Thanks for hanging out, and we will see you all then.